Welcome to the Great Bays Tennis Podcast. I'm Steve Smith along with Brandon Flanagan. Episode 69, coming from Boynton Beach, the FM Tennis Performance Center. Tonight, more truth in tennis. We're going to go through the different types of tennis pros. I'm an amateur writer. I wrote this many, many years ago. I think a few of you will have seen this before. Different categories. These apply to only men, not women. We're not picking on the, ladies.
You know, it is a male-dominated profession. See, it's we do have a couple great female coaches on our staff, but it's there are more men coaching tennis than women. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, we could talk about that and why. I mean, actually in Russia, for the longest time, I mean, everywhere, women have been treated unfairly. Tennis wasn't an Olympic sport. So the inferior jobs went to women. And to this day, more coaches in Russia are female than male. Spent a lot of time, really in Moscow only, but been there many, many times. And my mother used to say that it's too bad that there's not more men teaching in elementary school. So that just to have a balance. Yeah, I think about my career. I work for Mary Lay. She was the head coach of the Vic Braden Tennis College. I think it's 10-15%. You know, when you're teaching young kids and kids have to go on a bathroom break, the early childhood development, you know, sometimes for sure you need to have a female coach. But let's get going on this. My father used to say the world would be a very boring place if everyone were the same. My mother used to say it's wrong to put people in categories. Well, we're going to go through...
that being said, we're going to put people in categories.
That being said, we're going to do that. I'm sorry, Mom. But why don't you go with number one, podcast number 69.
Well, I'll say this first. I've been coaching tennis for just about 20 years in some capacity, and you've been coaching tennis for about, what, 90 or 95?
You know, actually, Andy Fitzell is... He's great for tennis, and Andy's in his 40s, and I mean, I was a volunteer coach when he was born. I mean, so I've been doing it a long time. But if I keep going two more years, I'll have 50 years. So 48 years teaching tennis. But I really feel that my, you know, like almost 15 years in ice hockey, that's more how I'm wired from the very beginning.
Definitely helpful. But no, this list you've put out, you know, a few times on social media, I remember reading this years ago. And quietly thinking to myself, you know, which one of these 15 pros I might be, but of course, aspiring to be the total package pro. I think it's great for, you know, tennis coaches, tennis pros to read this. And it's also great for tennis parents to read this too, tennis players.
Yeah, I think the tennis consumer, but also too, it's two-sided, is that pros have to survive. And many times they're not wrong to fit this bill because that's what the customer wants.
Completely, completely.
A good friend of mine, Julian Krinsky, ran an amazing business for years in Philadelphia. And the people would always tease is that with Julian, the customer's always right. With me, the customer's always wrong. Because I'm dealing with goal-oriented juniors. And one time I was at a conference speaking. And Julian was speaking. So I walked in and he's very smooth. And he said he just pretty much changed the direction of his lecture and said that he provides an experience and I provide an education. So it's, you know, some kid wants a fun experience. It's actually the tennis teaching business is a service. It can be a disservice. You know, the kid just wants to come out and hit and giggle, have some fun. And, you know, you're saying, okay, we're going to do push-ups for an hour. It just doesn't fit.
Doesn't work. So number one is the conference pro. Which I think that obviously with COVID and the conferences, I think you see a lot of this now too on the Instagram pro, buy my course for $9.99. But they live to be presenters and are typically good for about 90 minutes. They often pretend to have great programs back home, but they really don't. Year after year, their content remains the same, but is simply recycled with a different title. They specialize in selling their expertise to an out-of-town audience. And I think obviously presenting is a much different skill than teaching.
Well, people, yeah, I have to take your hat off to someone who can hold the attention for 90 minutes and get in front of a group with the PowerPoint presentation. for me, I know so many people, they just would thrive on having the opportunity to be a conference pro. There's other people like, yeah, I don't really need to do that. For me, I was flattered one time where Vic Braden said at a conference that I was not attending that I'd been to more conferences than anyone, but I was definitely a conference junkie. And I think if you can leave a conference and you've just learned one thing, I one time was listening to Warren Pretorius. A lot of years have gone by and I'd lost a lot of hair and didn't recognize me. I had to introduce myself. And we had met many years before that. And Warren, who's an intellectual, so runs Tennis Analytics, said to me, he goes, because I asked, I said, you spent a lot of time with Vic? And he said, no, a couple of your trainees, Dave Nostrand, Mark Jakes, and Andy Fitzell was part of that group too. He's much younger at that time. And what Warren said to me, he goes, you were smart. You got everything Vic, you know, in the very beginning, where he goes, it took me time. I got a little nugget here and a little nugget there. Mm-hmm. But I do think that's a positive about conferences. But I do think that certainly Rocky One, Pretenders and Contenders, there's a lot of people I know, they're presenting and they do, they're very pretentious that they have a conference, they have a program at home and they really don't. And they're, this is what their players do. And
right.
They've really, they don't. I mean, and there's many people on YouTube now, if you do your homework, they haven't really been in the trenches. They really haven't trained.
Yeah, they haven't produced or developed.
They haven't spent years teaching tennis. Yeah. A couple of young guys, I know Ryan Reed, he runs 2 Minute Tennis, does an outstanding job, but he spent 20 years working for Jim Klein, who's a former student of ours. But mm-hmm. I have some students who I've confronted them and said, really? I mean, I think that you should pound a few nails before you become an architect.
Sure. Well, it's like playing tennis. It's repetition. You know, the more hours you spend on the court teaching someone, the better you're going to get at it.
Yeah, I remember I had a teacher in prep school, taught Latin, and he used to actually practice. Mm. You know, he was aspiring to be hired at Dartmouth, he eventually was. But we used to look through the window, and he's in there giving a lecture to nobody. Mm-hmm. And that was long before people were filming. So conference pros, that's one type. Let's go to the next one.
The briefcase pro. They seldom step on court. They count their money. Their staff meetings are never about forehands and always about finances. They save a lot of money on sunscreen. They choke on their type of overhead. They farm out the work and never worry about the crop of players, just the profit.
No, I think you have to really have respect for the briefcase pro. I think people should know someone like Doug Cash. He walk into a tennis facility and he's forgot more than I know. I mean, as far as the wind cost of windscreens and the lights and how's this thing working and, you know, just the formula for financial success. So I don't want to downplay that, but I do think that, you know, from our corner of the world where we're ball hopper pros is get a little chip on our shoulder because a lot of times a briefcase pro, it's pure capitalism. They're going to farm out the work. They get younger people that are very inexperienced. They're not trained, and they're just carrying the briefcase. They're just counting the money. So that's a pro that if you've had years of tennis teaching experiences, still stay connected with the game. That's one thing that Tennis Corporation of America. You think about a vertical move. People want to, well, I want to move up. And then people would move up and say, well, gee, I want to be a tennis director. You know, I think of perhaps Club Corp, Lifetime Tennis. And sometimes people are just forced to be a briefcase pro because that's what the job's.
Right.
The job, even the job description, they're not even allowed to teach more than 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
So there's a couple different sides to all this. But go ahead, number three.
Sure. We see this a lot in South Florida. The kill you with kindness pro. They dress well. They patiently and politely wait as the ladies talk at the net post. They are always politically and diplomatically correct. They repeatedly say nice shot and good idea. Their warm-ups have no stains. They know now all social agendas.
It's always baffled me at indoor courts where the courts are so expensive. get in trouble with the ladies. We will pick on the macho male egos, but the ladies will just stand at the net post. And there's all this, you know, valuable court time just ticking away. But I think you find that now in junior tennis too many times where I don't know the key to success, but I know the key to failure, make everybody happy. Well, they're going to fail as a tennis player, but if many times what will happen at a tennis club is you got to make it fun, so the kid wants to come back. And then I think you grow away from being a teacher with principles, and then you can find yourself being a little bit too jolly.
Yeah, I think it's important to be kind, obviously, but I think it's you definitely have to try to continue to help people get better. And if you're just telling them how good they are all the time, then that's not going to happen.
A junior tennis player, Monday through Friday, they go to tennis and they love it. They're doing fun drills. This is great, great, great. And then they're not happy on the weekend. You know, that's what we try to do it the other way, where not so happy Monday through Friday, and eventually they go to the tournaments that they can flat out play. Number four.
The back slapping pro. They are great for men's night. Their motto, low to high and swallow through, works for them and their followers. They hang around with guys after ball banging sessions to do 12-ounce curls. Good old boys love them. They are very comfortable with profanity.
This past weekend, I was down in Boca at a junior tournament. And, you know, one time there was exactly 10 people teaching tennis. So I was there 2 days. Many times what will happen with a back slapping pro is they're hitting a lot of balls. That's what men's night, that's what they want to do. And, but it's a great workout. You know, I've run a lot of those workouts. I mean, I remember you years and years ago, we used to call it wanna workout.
Less talk, more sweat.
Yeah. Even run those where you had to qualify based on your fitness level, not your tennis level. This is for the crazy fit. But with that, people would walk out, that was a great lesson. And I'd say, no, that was a great workout. You just set them straight. I said, please come back next time. But it was a great workout. It wasn't a great lesson because you didn't learn anything.
Right.
You might have learned that, okay, you got to get fitter. You got to eat a little bit better, exercise a little bit more. Number five.
Oh, one of my least favorite on the list. Again, we see this a lot in South Florida. The car trunk pro. And I think buyer, especially beware in this situation. They sneak on public courts. They charge less than professionals. They hunt for discount hunters. They obtain their phantom credentials at Walmart. They also cut out the government from their work, paying no taxes.
Well, first of all, I apologize to Walmart. as I did say, I'm an amateur writer. The car trunk pro, you're going to find that in a place like Palm Beach County because the weather is nice 12 months a year. With Welby Van Horn used to say this, that a $5 lesson is generally much more expensive than a $50 lesson. Mm-hmm. Take a lesson from a proven professional. It doesn't take long to just look across the courts and you just know that, the kid's not getting quality instruction. So just because it's cheaper, it's not better. But on the other side of that, Nick Baldieri needs to be given credit for this. At one point, tennis teachers were not paid what they're paid now. Nick Baldieri is the first one to come along and just charge so much money per hour. Mm. At one time in America, there's only one type of blue jeans. It was just Wrangler. You could just get Wrangler blue jeans. And then Levi's came along. Next thing you know, there's designer blue jeans. And it used to be a lesson was a lesson, and the local pro would charge reasonable fees. They had to make a living. Mm. My father, we always belonged to a place where you could play golf. Mm-hmm. And I know my father would, you know, buy equipment from the golf pro. And I remember someone saying, you can buy those, it'd be much cheaper if you bought them somewhere else. He said, if everybody did that, we wouldn't have a golf pro. Mm-hmm. Support your local pro. But I also think, too, is that we're at a public tennis court, if you end up there where you're having kids, you teach the kids, they're warming up for a tournament, you just need to be conscious that it's a public tennis court. It's open for the public. It's not there for squatters' rights to use that court. Mm-hmm. with I know someone that you helped out, that I helped out, Raleigh Grossbaum. He was with me for a short time studying tennis. And we used some courts that we were told were, we joined the YMCA, said, oh, no, you joined the YMCA courts, but they weren't YMCA courts. They were really abandoned courts. But what we could do is anytime anybody would show up, you know, we could just go teach on a field. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the teaching pros were shocked. They said, oh, no, no problem. You can have the courts. And we would just go over and teach on the grass, and they would be shocked that I could have these advanced players shadow swinging in slow motion. Mm-hmm. But you should be able to play. You should be able to practice on a field. You should be able to practice in a parking lot. But, yeah, the car trunk pro, it's not right for them to be taking away court time. It's a taxpayer's court. It's a public's court.
Right. They're charging less because there's – you know, not paying for that court time. They're not paying a percentage back to the club.
They're not paying for the courts. Also, a lot of times, too, they're not paying the government.
Yeah.
The
cash money.
Let's go to number six, different types of teaching pros.
The merchant of flesh pro. They hang out at local tournaments and pass out their business cards to parents whose kids can already play. They promise to skyrocket the kids to the top with their incredible self-proclaimed insights. They start all sentences with I or me.
Yeah, that's not my favorite. I mean, I don't think it's ethical to approach a kid. We call it the third base coach as well. You know, you're coaching a kid's about to score. We in America, maybe around the world, but in this country, we certainly need more first base coaches. Pride yourself on being able to take a beginner and create new players, not go and basically steal players. Mm-hmm. It's the merchant of flesh pro. I think you need to pride yourself. I understand college coaches are recruiters, but I think you need to pride yourself on being a developmental coach. And then to have this, this secret sauce. There is no secret sauce. There is no secret sauce. Now, the consumer makes a mistake. I mean, say, for example, someone's a really good tennis player. They go to college, maybe. You know, they weren't even good enough to, you know, make their lineup, but they come back and they're not honest about that. And, you know, the older they get, the better they were. And the parents many times thinks it's a shortcut. Instead of just staying loyal and paying the teacher who's working with your child, is you're going to hit with a glorified sparring partner. Mm-hmm. Now, what we say in boxing, the glorified sparring partner, they wear a headset and they wear a mouth guard. They don't say anything. But the glorified sparring partner in tennis, they're compelled to say something, and that's where their career starts. Their career starts, and I understand there's a positive to this paid hit with the UTR. I heard that, and I said, I thought that was for the mob, paid hit. But I was told the young guy, Eubanks from Georgia, great tennis player, saw him play on TV. That means you're a great tennis player if you're playing on TV. I was told to hit with him for a UTR paid hit, $450. And, you know, W.C. Fields, the sucker was born every minute. You're not going to get better by just banging the ball with, you know, somebody who can, you know, and that's how that's set up. So that, and the positive of that is the UTR I read where it's so difficult for a young player to break in on the tour and make money. Mm. So that while they can make money to support their tennis, but really, in the end, I just don't see the positives in that. The merchant of flesh pro. Yeah. Number seven, what do you got?
Major suck-ups. They are sophisticated groupies. They kiss so much that human chocolate tastes like vanilla. They would change their last names for tournament credentials that assures them a place in the player's lounge. They are big-time name droppers.
No, we're actually not using profanity on the website, but that's my fault. I actually wrote this. I apologize, Annie Fitzell. I do think that there is an art to profanity, and sometimes it really helps. I have kids. I say, all right, raise your hand if you've seen a PG-13 movie.
It's just a donkey, right? That's the word that I used?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like Ron Burgundy. I just read what's on the teleprompter.
All right, Burgundy. With, what was the name of that movie?
Anchorman.
Anchorman. I had a young guy, Gareth Ducre. I was coaching Gareth, and he saw the movie on a Friday, and he just begged we all had to go see it on Saturday. And I remember a group of us went. You would even know these players. Megan Broderick,
sure.
Jeffrey Secchi.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us sat there, and I didn't get it.
You didn't get it?
I didn't get it. I guess.
San Diego.
Have to see it a few more times. But yeah, major suck-ups with sophisticated groupies. I always tease people and say, you would change your last name to hang around a really good player. You know, a lot of times, Braden used to say this, is that the player is not the one that changes. You know, a player starts to have some success in juniors.
Mm-hmm.
The player doesn't change, but everybody around the player changes.
Mm-hmm.
And you, know, you can just see it so loud and clear. Brandon Flanagan, number 8.
The legend in their own mind, pro. I know a few of these. The older they get, the better they were. Typically, they have played a total of 4 ATP matches and act like they won all 4 Grand Slams. Their egos are just like those of television tennis commentators. They put themselves in their own hall of shame, but don't know it. They act as if a lesson with them is a total honor.
Well, I apologize to TV commentators. I'm sorry. You know, it's good to have a healthy ego. And certainly you can learn from someone who's played. You wouldn't want to take a lesson from an airplane. Or you say you wouldn't want to take a lesson on how to fly an airplane if the person had never flown an airplane.
Right.
But, you know, you just think about like a Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots. Hey, Bill, let's see you punt the ball. How far can you punt the ball? Bill, can you throw the ball? Van Horn used to say, if you can play, and what a great player. He may be the best person in tennis who was an accomplished player and an accomplished teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He took them both to the highest level, a true teacher. But Welby used to say, it's definitely a bonus if you've played the game. Braden used to say that if you expect your students to play, you should expect yourself to play. But yeah, a legend in their own mind.
We just talked to Doug Verdick and his father, again, really just social, recreational tennis player in many, many respects. You know, as a football player, was a 3-sport athlete at Stanford, and tennis not being one of them. And obviously one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Yeah. Let's go with number 9.
A lot of these in Boca Raton as well. Soap opera pro. These guys are R-rated. They're smooth talkers and have massive macho male egos. They don't break serve, but are known to break up marriages. It is a given that they wear a gold chain around their rubber neck. Their sunglasses hide their eye candy evaluations. For sure, they have a really nice car. These shaky characters go missing at lunchtime.
Now, we do have some people listening that English is not their first language. We do have some people listening that maybe have not been in the locker room. They spent more time in the library than the locker room, and we'd have to actually explain. When they wear sunglasses that hides their eye candy evaluation, that means they're wearing their sunglasses and they can look at women while they're looking at their sunglasses, where they're wearing their sunglasses. Yeah, we had a meeting earlier today, and I have a young player here from Japan. I go, did you get that? Let me spell that out. So certainly his English is much better than my Japanese.
Yeah.
But the soap opera pro, yes, I spent many years in Boca, 7 years in Boca. I like that where they shaky characters and go missing at lunchtime. It's getting past PG-13.
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay,
yes.
Let's go to number 10 from Flanagan.
The trench pro, this is, we're going into the more positive varieties of tennis pros here. The trench pro.
Well, according to our liking.
It's true. We got to give these guys credit, though, the trench pros. Hours after hours, feeding balls, hitting balls. It's not easy. They're true ball hopper guys. They love the game and seldom leave the court. They talk to kids and parents the same way. They have no hidden agendas and are a dying breed. They do not fit into the new American tennis culture and have nothing to do with glorified babysitting.
The trench pro. I think that you should talk to parents and kids the same way. That expression, you know, you can't fool a kid. You know, I think it is really important when kids have a comparative experience. You know, they maybe it's a analysis, a video breakdown, and they find, or is it, going back to Warren Pretorius, where you chart a match and it's a statistical breakdown. The one thing that we do, the way we teach tennis, or the way we can teach tennis, at putting all these different methods together, you don't necessarily have to feed balls and hit balls. And so as you get older, you know, you start having the kids feed balls, and, you know, and all kids should learn to feed a tennis ball. You know, we have kids visit, and the first time they come, say they're a right-hander, you say, okay, let's see, feed some balls. Mm. And they don't put the basket on their left hip.
Yeah.
They put the basket on the right side, and they have to every time reach over the basket, grab one ball or two balls, and they reach over. And I just go, stop, come here. I said, you've never fed balls before. That's a problem. That means they don't do basket training. Mm-hmm. But the trench pro, that's where players are developed, in the trenches. Mm. You know, it's like, and it's not to belittle the guy with a shovel, but it's not easy to use a shovel. Not that I'm an expert with a shovel, although to go back in time, I did work at a cemetery. My grandfather, Mikhail, used to say, you have such an important job. People are dying to get in. He also said that I have so many people working underneath me. But
this is getting very dark now.
Yes.
Taking a dark turn.
But the trench pro, the working the shovel. I think of a David Ferrer. He's going to quit tennis. You know, he's stuck at like 250 in the world. His father, his grandfather said, you can't quit until you do this. Mm-hmm. You know, and he had not pursued his education to an elite level. He was going to be a tennis pro. And that's what a lot of Europeans do compared to Americans. Americans will say, I'm going to remain an amateur so I can play in college as intern pro. Mm. So he was kind of putting all his eggs in one basket. So the story goes is they got him a job with a shovel and a wheelbarrow. That's a real trench pro. And I guess it was supposed to be 2 weeks, and he lasted 10 days, and he came back. And from that point forth, he was like the hardest worker in tennis and very popular among the pros. His nickname, it was Dog. That was your Spanish.
Pero.
All right, let's go to number 11 from Brandon Flanagan.
The myth-throwing pro. Their facts are fiction. They are pretenders, not contenders. They baffle with BS, mumbo-jumbo. They are tennis tech monsters. They love to listen to themselves talk about something they don't understand. Not too many balls are hit in their lesson. It interferes with their ongoing dissertation.
The myth, Vic Braden, he was a myth buster. And I mean, people need to go back. And I was always flattered that Vic used to say that, Steve, you and I should be working together and we should have had a master plan. And I said, yeah, this is how it would work, Vic. You would have gone forward with a flashlight, making new discoveries. And I would have gone backwards, hitting people overhead with a club. Did you get that? They use my name in third person, Steve Smith. I've had a few people say, Steve Smith is no myth. But the mumbo jumbo, I mean, the more people talk, the less they say. I come back to pick on TV commentators. If you listen to them, and actually with TV commentators, they definitely have a lot to share. But if you get online and you say, and I think Tracy Austin's one of the best at where she's going to discuss how to hit a forehand or backhand. Mm-hmm. But when you take a lot of those top commentators, they were top players. And then when you listen to them talk about the serve for 30 minutes, the more they say, the less they know. I love to listen to McEnroe, but you know, the Mac, you know, that's, you know, he's, you know, so great for tennis in so many ways, but you know, that's not what he did. Same, you know, Patrick was in charge of the USTA, wasn't director player, though, he was a general manager.
Right.
But up to that point in his career, he'd basically, you know, not given a lesson or been in the trenches. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had, I think, been to the quarters, US Open, the semis of Australia. But yeah, miss, boy, oh boy, they're out there. You know, you just, you know, we have a lot of online content or courses, down together, up together, toss high for more time, scratch your back, stay down, come over the ball, come under the ball. That just goes on and on. I was tested by Dennis Vandermeer, and every time I made a mistake, it was more about the organization, less than he'd blow the whistle. But, you know, just like the USTA, USTA does have, I think it's a group of four, maybe it's larger now, but people that travel around the country and they evaluate, they police, maybe that's the wrong word, but they evaluate umpires, like who's going to make it to the US Open? How competent are they? But we really should have that. Imagine if we had the grip police, or we had, you know, I was watching someone take an overhead lesson this past weekend. Is I do that when I get to a tennis, so I'm going to go around, I'm just going to watch the tennis teaching. But every time someone, you know, shares a myth that someone's right there to blow a whistle, the whistle would be, imagine that at a tennis club. I mean, there's 10 people teaching tennis. Yeah. We have a new type of bird tweeting from the sideline. Number 12.
The cheerleading pump you up pro. We saw the King Richard movie. I think we recognize one of the main characters from that is very similar to this type of pro. They are masters of the one-liners. They even use poetry, grip and rip, load and explode. They instantly hand out nicknames. They make 12-year-old juniors feel like they should skip college tennis and go straight to the pros. They are popular Pied Pipers, and inexperienced tennis players love them.
Inexperienced tennis parents.
Parents.
Yeah. With, yeah, you're referring to Rick Macy.
Pop the popcorn.
With, you know, Nick Baltieri is someone who, you know, you got to get people to believe. I heard Carling Bassett say that Nick Baltieri is the best junior coach in the world and the worst pro coach in the world, because with the juniors, Nick was saying, this is what you're doing, my way or the highway. But then with the pros, they were paying him. But with Macy, I remember working with Vicky Duval. In fact, at one point, it was set up that Carlo Lavosi, he's done really well in business, coach in Canada that we've worked with. He's, you know, so he left tennis teaching. But really sight unseen, Carlo and some of his friends were going to sponsor Vicky. She had the it thing. So I worked with her brother. She wanted to come and work on her serve. She wanted to play the U.S. Open. I said, you just need to play the 18th, get the wild card. So she did. So Nadine, you know, they went through so much with what happened in Haiti. It's like a scene from a movie where her father, who was a practicing physician, he was, after that, he could no longer practice medicine. So she was at a tournament, and some people that had the financial means to get on an airplane and just have, you know, rescue the father from get a medical attention that wasn't available. So the airplane's there, but they have to go back, and they have to go through the debris and look for his passport so he could actually get out of the country. But I was having lunch with Nadine, the mom, and Vicky. And Vicky had said that she had worked with Rick. And I said, give me a second, I'll give you the nickname. You know, she's from Haiti. So I just said, yeah, he called you the Haitian sensation. She said, how'd you know? Well, Haitian, you know. But you actually need that. So, yeah, so Vicky, you agreed to be her coach. And, but you wanted to give the people you're working with 2 weeks' notice. But she got a wild card. And, you know, so at one point with Vicky, she started playing world team tennis. And, I mean, I didn't know she was going to function that Elton John was performing at. And with, I just think back that if she had just stayed with, you know, then certainly she had cancer for a year, survived that. But yeah, so Rick, I mean, there's a positive to that. But at one point with Macy and Matt, he, you know, talking about that movie, he wanted to work where I was working. I was a director of Seguzo Bassett, which is now Chris Everett. And Rick handled it so well. It's in his book. You got to flip it. You got to turn it around. And I really respect Macy for this. So he wanted to meet. So we finally meet, and I had him watch this video, put it in. It's a kid who couldn't hit the ball very well. And I put another video in. Didn't tell him it was the same kid, and the kid could hit the ball well. And then I asked him, I said, what do you think of this kid named Seth Rose? And he said, I've never heard of him. So for me, seeing the movie, it was, okay, Rick was in a lot of financial pressure at that time. It was at the time exactly. So I met with Rick, and, you know, I mean, he turned as red as an apple. I said, well, the kid on the tape was in your program for a long time. Mother and grandmother supporting him. He went on and was all American and he played it. I mean, I spent quite a few, quite a bit of time. Maybe it was a 3-year period where he was really young. And, you know, he's just one of these kids who shot up. And next thing you know, he went from a little kid to a big kid. He was a great tennis player. But Macy said it so well, and he was so right. He said, Steve, you and I work great together. You get the kids to third base, and I'll bring them home. And, you know, the way we teach tennis, I mean, sometimes it's like the Jesuits say, if you could just have the first 7 years and then let them go. Because perhaps, you know, we're on the, definitely not perhaps, we're on the side of overteaching. I'd say most are on the side of underteaching. But, you know, so not to be critical, you on a, say, a small staff, you wouldn't want to have all trench pros. It would be great if you had that pump you up pro. A lot of the trench pros, you know, as it comes down to brain typing, we had a whole entire podcast on that, is some J's, you know, they're only going to smile once a year.
Right.
Where P's are going to smile every minute. So, but yeah, let's go to the next one. We're at number 13, different type pros. And you can be a combination. It's not like you're one or the other. And sometimes, again, your situation forces you to, like for myself, I don't really consider myself the pump, to be that pump you up pro. But I mean, sometimes you got to do that. Like, okay, let me pump this kid up. He's down and out. The pity party. He's feeling sorry for himself.
Lucky number 13 is the support pros. Difficult to find because most millennials are not looking to be mentored. So true. If you're lucky enough to find one, they know they have to pay their dues to progress from being an apprentice to being a professional. They patiently and loyally show up, put up, and eventually climb up.
Yeah, no, we could put other names to this too. Is that there's more than 15. I mean, you need to go back and rework this a little bit. I could add to it. You know, I could sit around and go, okay, let me come up with a new one. The YouTube pro.
Oh, brutal.
There's so many YouTube pros that they're just watching YouTube. But there's the YouTube guru, you know. So, but the support pro, I guess the term millennial, those that follow our Facebook content, we have over 5,000 pages. There's a song, just plug it in, the millennial song.
Better watch it, Steve. I'm a millennial, you know, so just watch what you say here.
What year? You born in 84?
85.
Yeah, so, but now there's the XYZ generation. I haven't kept up with that. So it's just millennials. But how many new generations are there, do you know?
I'm not sure.
But yeah, you're not the youngest now as a millennial. There's new generations. But no, definitely a support pro. I tell a lot of people what you should do is get a job as a bartender, waiter, work nights. You know, you can work for anyone if you work for free. With, like for myself, I was working for All American Sports, and I had a pretty good situation where summers in New England, winters in Boca, and, you know, All American Sports used to have a program at Boca West. So Andy Brandy, I mentioned Andy before, he was telling me that Welby Van Horn's the best. I think Vic Brady's the best. So I went to work for Welby for peanuts. You know, it was just a summer season. By circumstance, I get to spend a lot more time with Welby than just that summer season. But so then I went, so he says, what are you going to do? You're resigning from your position. At that time, he was telling people I was the smartest for six kids because I was out of the Northeast. I wasn't dealing with old man winter anymore. So I said, well, I'm going to work for this guy, Welby Van Horn, for 8 weeks, and I'm going to be paid this. Maybe, I'm sure he didn't. I didn't say I was paid. He asked me what he was going to be paid. And then I'm going to go work for Vic Braden. And you go, what are you going to be paid for work with Vic Braden? I said, I work for free. I'm going to just hang out. So that's where I had to, you know, I got a job working nights. But support pros, you need to be mentored. And you need to hang around with, you know, Dallas. Dallas is a city unto itself. And I spent a lot of time going back and forth to Dave Anderson's place. He doesn't actually own it. With Brookhaven Country Club. And there's so many pros that just didn't spend enough time working for Anderson. But they would go around the corner where they can make a little bit more money. Now, eventually you have to be able to move up. But I think that, you know, John Verde, love John Verde, used to manufacture the Stroke Master ball machine. John would say, you know, an assistant pro is a head pro in waiting. Mm. But you have to pay your dues. But it's just too easy for people. And I do think that when tennis coaches first enter the industry, they're overpaid. They're way overpaid.
Absolutely.
They make too much money per hour. And a lot of them get stuck in the mud because they just stay right there and they don't do more things. I think that's, we need more support pros. Let's go to number 14.
The political career climbing pro. They forget their roots and the people who've helped them along the way. They embellish their playing background and go to the limit to be around tennis celebrities and VIPs. They vanish from the locker room and become a permanent fixture in the boardroom. Nothing is funny if they are not in on the money.
Agencies. Again, picking on TV commentators. TV commentators spend a lot of time around professional players. And TV commentators end up getting a lot of jobs. Sometimes they'll leave their TV gig because they go back on the tour. Mm-hmm. But they're only really romancing the players that are making lots of money. Mm. You know, they're not only coaching the third base players, they're coaching the people who've already scored.
Yeah.
And, you know, where Darren Cahill, you know, one thing about Darren is that he spent a lot of time with a young Leighton Hewitt. He was taught by the Australian Peter Smith, and we have the American Peter Smith. I'd love to just look into the backstory. Hewitt was not the best ball striker, but what a great, great competitor. You can see he's just, his DNA is Australian football. But that's one thing about Cahill is he stayed with him until he became number one in the world. It's amazing where that was one thing that was great about Dennis Vandermeer is he coached Margaret Court, he coached Billie Jean King. But you say I had the dubious pleasure of teaching the best players in the world and the worst players in the world. It's interesting that going right back to number one, the conference pro, it's amazing how people at a section level, they want to present at a national level. And people at a national level want to present at an international level. At one point, the ITF, they would only let two people from a country into a conference. I can remember being in Boca, and I actually introduced Jack Roppel to Tim Gullickson, and they became fast friends, and Tim was on the cover of Jack's first book. And I used to come back to Boca during the semester break when I was at this college in Texas, and we were with Tim Gullickson. Hey, Gully, let's do this. Let's practice in the morning. In the afternoon, we'll go to this conference. And, we were not, at that time, really not many people knew who Jack Grapple was, and they certainly didn't know who I was. Mm. And I said, no, we'll get straight in. Jack and I would not have been in. We'd walk right through the front door, but we were with Tim Gullickson, and we were in the conference. Mm. And it's like, okay, you want to come back tomorrow? Yeah, we'll come back tomorrow. So that's a very good example of who you're with. People, I would say that a lot of people, they do anything they can to be in the booth. They want to be on the TV screen. And mm-hmm. they'll change their last name to be in the booth. All right, winding it down here. Keep in mind that tennis pros have to wear several hats. So they can go, as I said, one category to the next. But let's go to 15.
The total package pro. Most of them are deceased. They once played well. They can teach, coach, and manage. They can build championship cultures and make chicken salad out of chicken. In their world, the program is bigger than the individual, and everybody practices with everybody. They naturally teach character.
Yeah, the difference between the total package pro, and also I think with that now, it's really progressed in a positive way where, the four areas of tennis, you've got the technical, the tactical, the physical, and the mental emotional. For years, I've been able to get people in shape, but not that I know that much about the physical side of it. It's like, okay, I got a whistle and I got the voice and I'm going to make you do these exercises, and perhaps they're the wrong exercise. But the trench pro, many times they don't, it's not maybe not their thing, or they don't have that particular skill set to build the culture. You know, they're just, it's just them. They're on one court and they're zeroed in on that one student. Maybe they're just giving private lessons only, and they're not going to be the one who, you know, creates that program. You know, let's be on the program, and then you know everybody in the program. For me, what should happen in a junior development program is there's no stratification. There's no caste system. I think it's wrong when the advanced players don't know the names of the beginning players. Everybody should know everybody's name. And granted, the compatibility factors, the players, you know, the beginning player to the advanced player, they can't do drills with each other. They can't play matches with each other. Well, certain enough, they could do some technical drills with each other, just tossing balls. But they can all start with checkpoint. You know, we'll do solo exercises where, say, for example, at a typically a tennis program, the coach or the coaches, they have to talk to a couple of the parents that are dropping off their children. And the program shouldn't wait. The program should start. You know, it's a really good program if the coach can, or coaches can disappear for a few minutes and the program runs itself. But with, yeah, so sometimes the trench pro, they're not capable of that, but the total package pro, they're going to make that happen. I think going back to the YouTube coach, there's so much plagiarizing. You know, Andy Fitzell did a great job over 2 years. A pandemic had a lot to do with that, but he put together these quality Instagram posts. And now with social media, which I know little about, I try to know as little as possible. Like, for example, I've put something on Facebook for, we've only missed like 2 days, and that was just recently, for well over a 10-year period. So no, I don't post. It's not a principle, no. And I don't really, you know, you like me, I unlike you, that type of thing. But Andy will make a video, and then people will, they make the video themselves. So, you know, our whole purpose is to share content. But he makes, with his background and all the years that he spent, for example, with Vic, and he just puts a video out and it's just refined to the T, and then someone copies it. And then however it goes, a hashtag or that's the term. But I think there's, you know, way too much plagiarizing. Another would be the ghost follower. You know, we're flattered in one sense that, you know, we have a lot of ghost followers. They would never tell anybody that they follow our content.
Right.
And keep in mind, if they follow our content, you know, Andy here in recent times, it's the Steve and Andy stuff. But for a long time, it was the Steve Smith stuff. And it's not. It's just not. But I do think that could be, there's so many others that could be added to this. But we'll just go through it again to read them off. Conference Pro, Briefcase Pro, Kill You With Kindness Pro, Back Slapping Pro, the Car Trunk Pro, the Merchant of Flesh Pro, the Major Suck Ups Pro, the Human Chocolate. I'd like to say that was my line, but I stole that. I can't remember where I first read that. But the Legend in Their Own Mind Pro, Soap Opera Pro, Trench Pro, the Myth Throwing Pro, the Cheerleading Pump You Up Pro, and the last couple, Support Pros, the Political Career Climbing Pros, Total Package Pros. Now for yourself, you run multiple sites. Let me ask you a question. Which pro are you looking for? You're going to hire someone to join your team. They can start pretty much at the bottom, work their way up. And I know you have a nutritionist and mental performance, but I'm talking about not the physical therapist and masseuse. How are you picking a young tennis teaching professional? Which one are you looking for?
I think we're going with number 9.
The Soap Opera Pro? I would think it would be the Trench Pro or the Support Pro.
Yeah, those are both great. I think, you know, the interesting thing about all 15 of these, I think minus number 9, is they all have some positives to them. It does pay to suck up sometimes, as funny as that one is. Number 7, Major Suck Ups.
If you can't schmooze, you're going to lose, baby.
No, each one has its positives and negatives. I think it's awfully, awfully tough to be a total package pro where you can really do it all. But I think when we're talking to, whether it's, you know, a young tennis teaching professional or someone who wants to get in the business as a coach, or if we're talking to an experienced person, we do want to, you know, have them buy into working towards becoming a total package pro. And that means learning every side of the business, working on your game if it's not a strong point, of course, working on your teaching, diagnostic abilities, you know, dealing with clients and working with juniors and adults and the whole number of different things, as well as the business side. So that is what everyone should aspire to be. You know, if they want to spend a portion of their time on the court, and that can always lead to other opportunities as far as presenting at conferences or stepping off the court more and being more of a manager.
No, I think with longevity, if someone's going to be in tennis for a career, they need to respect the briefcase pro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure. Like a Doug Cash I mentioned, you know, he's forgot more than I know. It's like, okay, we'll talk to this guy. The business of tennis with, I think of a young guy that we've trained, he's going to come here visit in a couple of weeks, Fergus O'Rourke, good German name, actually, Fergus O'Rourke from Ireland. So you have to be able to work and change lanes. Okay, right now I'm working career-minded juniors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I'm working with early childhood development.
It's not
now,
easy to do.
Now yeah. I'm in a ladies' clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you spend a lot of time with us, I mean, people, a kid might go home and go, Mom, Steve, Coach Steve told me to sit down and shut up. I said, no. I said, you got to get the beginning of it. All right, everybody know who Vince Lombardi is? His name's on the trophy. And Lombardi used to say, sit down and shut up. So what are you going to do? You got to sit down and shut up. So you can do a little bit of humor, but, you know, that master manipulator, the kid will paint the picture, like, this is what happened.
Mm.
With brain typing, people go back and listen to the podcast we had on brain typing. Once you find your brain type, we tell people you should just try to be the opposite. You know, so if you're an extrovert, you got to, okay, I got to try to be introverted. Mm-hmm. If you're introverted, you got to try to be extroverted. The P's, the easygoing ones, need structure. And the people that are just over the top with structure. I guess we're going to talk to Gabe Wapner. Somebody told me they like it when we mention names. There's a guy who was structured.
Very structured.
And in a lot of ways, I still tell you, there's a guy who, you know, he shows up at our tennis house and he knows when the garbage goes out. We've got a group of people right now. We might have to tell them for 5 years. This is when the garbage goes out. But coming back to Fergus is that, like, I just think in your situation where you're doing all of those things. You got early childhood development.
Mm-hmm.
You got junior players. You know, you've got a men's night. You know, you get so many different things, and it's like you've got to be able to. It's as I used to say that. Serving and returning service, like change channels. You know, okay, this is your mindset when you're serving. This mm-hmm. is your mindset mm-hmm. when you're returning. But yeah, so we've had some fun putting this together. I recently shared it, and someone said, gee, you know, has it ever been published? But this is the first time we've gone a little bit more public with it.
I think all the listeners are dying to know, Steve, without incriminating yourself, which one of the 15 are you?
Which one of the pros am I?
Number eight, maybe.
Number eight, number eight, a legend in your own mind. Yes, I'm getting bigger and better all the time. With is that before or after the toupee comes in? I get that toupee on Tuesday, and then I'm going to get a gold chain. I've got to start wearing designer clothes.
There you go.
Conference pro, I probably should be that now.
Mm.
I should be more. Just zeroed in on education. I think I'm old enough now and, you know, need to try to work more as an educator. Briefcase pro, weak. With kill you with kindness pro, weak. Backslapping pro, midnight. I haven't done a lot of that, but I can do that. I tell a story about, I was in Germany teaching tennis for Mark Hamlin. And we go to this place and there's a guy who's got a forehand grip on the backhand, and he's slicing everything. And it's a group of men, and Hamlin's my translator. Ich wünsche, ich spreche Deutsch. Ich spreche ein Übersetzer für Deutsch sprechen. I've already made 10 mistakes just saying that. So I said, I tell you what, if I can get Wolfgang, that was his name. I can't make this stuff up. If I can get Wolfgang to hit a topspin backhand, we'll just play doubles. If not, you got to listen to me. We'll do drills. We'll just play doubles and drink beer. So everybody's around. I said, Wolfgang, it's kind of like Lendl versus McEnroe. Lendl, they both had the same grip, but Lendl turned his wrist down. He could really stay steady from the baseline and just lift straight up. Air socket, ATA, air the armpit. So I get the guy to put his wrist down, and I said, don't change your wrist. He wasn't going to change his grip. And said, just lift. But I said, you could hit five in a row. Of course, the first few, they went so they didn't make it to the net. I go, just lift, lift. So, yeah, this is an experience. The car trunk pro, I have been the car trunk pro, but I'm well aware of Joe Public, and I have the skill set, so I don't have to stay on the court. I'm not going to go to a public court and run a program.
Right.
And take out cones. And I'm not even going to go on the court.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit off to the side and Merchant of Flesh Pro, no, don't like that. Don't like that. I have a brother who's a general manager, and he was a general manager, three different NHL hockey teams. I used to call him a Merchant of Flesh. You're just buying talent. You're not developing players. But major suck up, no, I'm not in that group. Try to stay humble, legend. Soap opera pro, no. I had definitely had coaches work for me that have broken up marriages, for sure. And that's why I can put this together, so many years and just observing. And then people listen to me, they know I'm proud of my title that Vic Braden gave me, Observer's Observer.
That's a good time to not mention names. I know people say they'd like to hear names, but let's not mention names in that category.
Yeah, usually what I do is I say, I'm not going to mention anybody's name, and then I just say the name. this happens with this thing right here, more truth in tennis, is tennis parents talk about tennis teaching pros, and tennis teaching pros talk about parents. But let's put it all out on the table. The thing about myth-throwing pros, I know Rob Krychek, we interviewed Rob, have to come back to how he says it. He says it better than I do, but he's got it down to four, but two levels of ignorance. They don't know, and they don't know, they don't know. And people, and I think, coaches are creatures of habit, and they many times, just like a parent will parent the way they did, is coaches will coach the way they were coached, and still to this day, come over the ball, stay down. The pump you up coach, I do that quite often. You can be great. We are great kids, but you came here to be a great player. So I do that, but it's not rah-rah. So you can be a pump the up pro without being a rah-rah. Support pro, I was defined by doing that, I was the gopher. That could be written down here. I was the go for it. Go for this, go for that. I'm hanging out with Vic Braden and Gideon Ariel, and my job was to go get a pencil and piece of paper. My job was to go see if there's any batteries. I think it's very important to have a job where you don't have a speaking part. Very, very important to have jobs where you don't have a speaking part. You think of some, and I think that, a week ago talking to Doug Verdick, that his father having a football background, read about Bill Belichick, making $75 a week. Mentioned Raleigh Grossman, one of the USTA coaches said to me, well, Raleigh worked for you for free. I said, no, he worked for gold. And, we have people actually come and pay us fees, not nominal fees, but they pay us. And that's the way it should be, is at first you pay to learn. You're a student. Most tennis teaching programs, they have no orientation program. They just give you your ball basket and say, you're on court eight. There's zero training, absolutely zero training. I think this is important. Young guy spent 3 years with us. He said, this was a very smart thing, Greg Lesueur. He said, when people start to teach, he's with online tennis instruction. So when people start to teach, they come off trying to play college tennis or pro tennis. So they're used to going down the line, cross court, play some tiebreakers. And then you send them to a group of, here's 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to people I'm training, being a political career climbing pro, Dennis Vandermeer used to say that, be politically connected. And that's a mistake that I've made. Dennis at one point offered where I could be a master pro if only the PTR would be tested. Because, you know, he was fighting tooth and nail. He was competitive between the USPTA and PTR, and everybody has a different path to walk. With same thing with the USPTA. At one point, I was asked to be on the board with both organizations. And looking back at that now, time ticks away. And at one point, if I wanted to speak at either of those functions, I'd just make a phone call. Mm. I can tell you right now, if I asked to speak at either one of those functions, most likely I'd be put on a waiting list. And so, no, I don't want anyone to think that we're having a little bit of fun with that, but you really should be politically correct. In this country, I don't think that you should have an opinion, a negative opinion for sure, with the Professional Tennis Registry or the USPTA, United States Professional Tennis Association, unless you're a member. Mm-hmm. The total package pro, you know, most of them are deceased. I mean, we go through our 8 pillars. I was fortunate to talk to Bill Jacobson. He's 85 years old, and he said that he'd like to pass on being on the podcast. I said, "Well, I'll call you up a few more times." And he had called me and just take notes. And to me, you know, he's the founder of, you know, he's a pioneer for tennis analytics with the computer age. But his name's not mentioned, and that's not right. But with that, Burwash, Peter sent us a nice note, and he hasn't really had his health for 10 years. But with I could be wrong, but who are taking the place in our country, in the U.S., who's taking the place of Vandermeer? Mm-hmm. I was with Doug Cash one time at a PTR function, and he calls over 3 guys that are pretty well known in the tennis teaching industry. He said, "You guys don't train tennis teachers." And we're doing it through a different platform, but that's something that I need to circle back, and hopefully I can hang in there for a few more years. We need to circle back and do a better job training tennis teachers. But I think our strength of ours is coming back to one of these is the trench pros. We spent so many years in the trenches. When you house kids and you're with kids 24/7, you can have a kid with you for 2 weeks. And you know that kid better than someone who's been coaching him just private lessons for 2 years. Mm-hmm. With, you know, and I get myself in trouble with tennis parents. Go, "Well, how many kids do you have?" They go, "So 2. How old is the oldest one?" 10. "Well, you got 1 year. You got 10 years experience with one kid. How old is the second kid?" 7. Okay, so you got 7 years experience with 10 kids. But I've been in the kid business since I was a kid. And I think it's very important to tell people, let me tell you, I'm not giving you advice. I'm just sharing experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, on parenting, the do's and don'ts. I've learned so much from parents on what to do and then from parents on not what to do. But anyway, these 15, we'll put this up on Facebook and hopefully you got a couple laughs out of it. But, you know, one of the definitions of humor is, how's it go? Tragedy with time. Mm-hmm. We laugh at some of these things, but some of these things they're not laughable. And if you're a tennis director and you have to wear so many different hats and you're not putting your staff through the role where they have to be a support pro and you don't even know it, you're the briefcase pro and you're in the air conditioning and you're in there counting, you know, not just counting money. Obviously you're a tennis director. You have to do so many things, but you have no idea. You know, somebody's just getting by on people skills and they're out there. To me, it's actually criminal. Mm. And I watched the other day of 3 courts of little kids being taught and, you know, high energy, the coaches, but no learning was taking place. You know, and that's not fair because it was just, okay, I was there and did I watch the whole 90-minute program? So not fair. I wasn't there in the beginning, wasn't there at the end, but just a quick glance is, you should just say ready play. Then if there's a feedback system, you should be able to call a kid over and say, "Hey kid, show me the ready position. Mm-hmm. Kid, show me how you set your racket up for the overhead." And I'm telling you, they can be 6 years old. Mm. You know, the Einstein thought where if you know your subject, you can explain it to a 6-year old. Mm-hmm. Your swing should go like a Ferris wheel and rotate. The ball rotates like a bicycle tire. It doesn't go like a merry-go-round. But anyway, we're over and out. Podcast number 69.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
All right, Flanagan. Good man. Thanks, everybody.